Clumsy Alonzo! Greetings and welcome to Aragon Cast, Twerpcast episode number 25. Today, we will not be discussing why American Idol preempts a good television show like Fringe. The horror! We will, however, be discussing Christopher Polanyi's Inheritance Cycle and its place in modern literature. I'd like to introduce you to James Caswell, executive producer and man most likely to date a four-star general. Don't ask, and I won't tell.
And I'd like to introduce you to a wonderful person. Instead, I'm going to introduce you to Doug Zeitlin, co-chief twerp. As Doug stated, we're going to be talking about Aragon and the sequels in the Inheritance Trilogy, Inheritance Cycle, written by Christopher Polanyi. Christopher graduated from homeschooling at the age of 15. At that same time, he began working on his first book, Aragon, which was self-published at the age of 18 through his parents' company, Polanyi International, LLC. He was New York Times best-selling author at the age of 19, and he claims to have been influenced by some of the greats in fantasy and science fiction, like J.R.R. Tolkien, Brian Jacques, Anne McCaffrey, Ursula K. Le Guin, and Frank Herbert.
That's a pretty powerful list to be influenced by.
Yeah, if you threw C.S. Lewis on there and George R.R. Martin, we'd have a lot in common, which would inherently mean that I should love his books.
Well, no, it said he's influenced by them. It didn't say his writing style is comparative to them. I think his writing style would be more comparable to, say, a young Anne Rice.
I think that's a very good comparison, because they both really love to give a lot of excruciating detail. I mean, in-depth detail.
Yeah, I know what you mean. You could see from the fantasy aspects that certainly he has a lot of the, I guess they call them the Tolkien fantasy elements. I mean, you've got, of course, the wizards, you've got the knight. You don't have orcs, you have urgles. You've got your dwarves and the races. Anne McCaffrey is pretty much the queen of the dragon world. I don't think anybody has really modernly come up with anything. I think the closest in modern times to really capture the imagination of the dragons is Naomi Novik in the His Majesty Dragon series of books.
I have a lot of theories about Polanyi and his writing style, but before we get into that, I'd love to actually give a review of the three books that have come out. So let's start out with Aragon.
Polanyi's first book, Aragon, was actually pretty well written, especially when you consider he started writing this book at 15 years old. It's remarkably well plotted, well thought out. There's believable characters, good characterization, good setting. When it comes to the technical aspects of the writing, I mean, he did fantastic.
I completely agree. For a 15 to 18-year-old writer, this was phenomenal work. And anytime I think about the series, I keep that in mind. For a 15-year-old to come up with this type of stuff was just remarkable. I remember my writings when I was 15, and there's no way now at the age of 30-plus that I would want people to be reading the stuff that I wrote back when I was 15.
I think back to writing at 15, I was like, okay, one-page paper. What do you mean it has to be both sides of the page? I didn't want to be anywhere near writing. And so here he is writing, you know, 1,000 words or more. It's a pretty impressive feat.
Of course, graduating at the age of 15 from homeschool kind of gives you the idea of what type of person he is. So Aragon tells the story of a young teenage orphan who finds this mysterious object that turns out to be a dragon's egg. When the dragon hatches, it bonds itself to him so that they are inseparable and brings about the next generation of the mythical dragon riders. He then starts a quest to discover the man he is destined to be, as well as the man others want him to become. When people find out who he is and what he has accomplished, he not only draws in avid readers, but he also provides a good deal of encouragement for young writers. On the flip side, as Doug stated earlier, Anne Rice really should have been mentioned on his list of influences, because he has that unique talent of dragging out a scene. He can draw out the description of a single object to 4, 5, 6 pages just like a master.
I understand what you're saying. That talent has its pros and its cons in and of itself. He's very talented in setting up these settings, these events, these people. Then it goes back to, like, Anne Rice. I've always enjoyed her plots and her storytelling, But she seems to be the type of person who could say, there was a chair in the room, and then spend 100 pages describing the history of the chair, each little nick in the chair, every coat of paint on the chair. And it really is like, okay, there was a chair in the room. It's really not important to the rest of the story. Which is what really got me about her, is it really wasn't important to the rest of the story. It was just 100 pages describing the chair. Obviously, I'm being facetious. There's no 100-page description of a chair in any of her books that I'm aware of. But that's what it feels like in her descriptive process.
It was 10 pages max.
I think that Paolini has a tendency towards the same style, where he'll pick something and then he'll describe it ad nauseum. I think the big difference for me anyways is usually there's a reason for it. If he's describing something, it's a setup for something that's coming later. Which may be sort of a weakness because it gives it away.
He's going into detail about this one particular point. Pay attention. It's going to come up on the quiz later.
It is a little over the top. But where I would say Anne Rice really spends something like 100 pages on her descriptions, Paolini may spend 4 or 5, sometimes as much as 10. I mean, it's not the same level.
The other point that critics tend to enjoy pointing out is the number of similarities Aragon has with a little film called Star Wars. A whiny orphan that's raised by an uncle, taken in by a mysterious master after the uncle dies, who informs him that he's part of an old order and teaches him how to use his new abilities. The master dies, and he joins the rebellion to fight against an evil emperor.
I really can't defend him on this point. You're exactly right. Down to the point where the aged master hands him the blade that was carried by his father. Whether it was directly intentional or just something that the Star Wars movie stuck in his mind, it follows the pattern of Star Wars exactly.
And it's not like he's the first person to do it. There have been numerous people who have done homages, I think we'll be nice and call it that, to George Lucas's best work. It's just that he's the most recent person to do it and be successful from it.
Again, this is not a defense of Paolini's work, but a lot of the work in Star Wars was ripped off from other sources. As opposed to just taking one source material and retelling it in another medium, Lucas tends to be a little more, I'll pick this little myth, I'll pick this little myth, I'll pick this little myth, and put them into one story.
Which kind of brings you back to the question of, is there an original story left in Hollywood?
I don't know who first said it, but essentially the way I've heard it is there are 7 original stories, and you can actually read them all in Shakespeare, and everything else is just a copy. However, when that was said, the implication was that Shakespeare stole the 7 stories also, not that he originated them.
The book was very popular, very successful. So therefore, Hollywood had to swoop in and ruin it. I mean, make a big screen version of it.
No, you were right the first time. They absolutely ruined it.
The movie starred Edward Spaliers as the title character, had Jeremy Irons in it, Selena Galori, Robert Carlyle, John Malkovich, and Damon Hounsou in it.
The best thing that I can see about this movie is it was a complete and utter waste of Jeremy Irons and John Malkovich talent. These are two people that I consider to be fairly distinguished actors in the crappiest roles they've ever taken.
They must have gotten paid a lot of money to be in this movie.
Or they owed somebody big favors, whichever.
Some of the big problems with the movie, they decided to do selective storytelling, which caused things to happen faster and more unbelievable in the film. In the book, his training with Brahm took months and many, many chapters. In the movie, it took about 5 minutes. Saphira went from this cute little dragon about the size of a dollar bill to a full-fledged, full-grown dragon in about 15 minutes. The pace was just off, especially if you were very familiar with the book.
This is the worst retelling of a book story I've ever seen. And I've seen some pretty bad ones. I mean, they're all over the place. Look at pretty much anything that's created from a John Grisham story. Stephen King movies tend to do very well, but when you actually compare them to the source material, there's usually very little in common, with The Shawshank Redemption being a notable exception to that, where it was a great short story and a great movie that were very similar.
I would have to say that this isn't the worst film adaptation that I've seen, but I don't think anything's going to knock Vincent Price's The House of Usher off that top spot.
We could do a whole show just on that. Gotta love Vincent Price anyways. I don't mind selective storytelling. when you have a book that's, you know, 500 plus pages, you cannot tell that story in 2 hours or 2.5 hours. It's impossible. Just reading the book is 17 discs. That's over 17 hours right there, just listening to it on the CD. So I'm all right with the selective storytelling. But a few of the things that really bothered me is by the time the movie was written and in pre-production, there were already 2 books out. And there is storytelling in the first book, which is intricate to the storytelling in the second book. However, does not appear in the movie at all. They've completely written out characters who, if they want to do a sequel to the first movie, if they're actually planning on making a movie of every book, that the producers just chose to leave them out completely. For what I assume are reasons of budget, they've taken these settings, which Paolini has taken a lot of time to describe in great detail, such as like enormous cities or cathedrals, I mean, really big places, and then they put them in like little shanty towns, just these little tiny sets, which would have been better served filming on green screen and just doing CGI, just trying to do justice to Paolini's work, and they didn't even try. The biggest one for me, honestly, my biggest pet peeve is as they chose their selective storytelling, it seems like they took just the action scenes. Here's a fight scene. Here's a fight scene. Here's a fight scene. And we're going to skip all the story that ties these fights together. So you just see Aragorn going from mindless fight to mindless fight, where in the book it actually makes sense because there's a reason for him to go from location to location. And you understand that he's not just fighting just because he's a dragon rider, that he's actually doing something for the good of people or to develop his character. And it's completely left out of the movie.
As much as the book had too much detail, the movie had nowhere near enough. It's like it decided that it was going to be the anti-book.
To the point where they actually added the John Malkovich character, who looks like there was one set that was built for him, and all of his scenes were shot on that one set, and he never left it.
He probably did his entire filming for the movie in one day.
It absolutely looks that way. It reeks of afterthought. His character doesn't actually appear in the book at all. They added this whole fight scene at the ending. They added these long scenes of dialogue that don't exist in the book.
And then they wonder why it fails miserably. Go figure. On the plus side, it did not make a lot of money, and low box office results means the film did not break even, which means, thank God, they're not going to make a sequel.
Honestly, I would rather see this movie redone on a Sci-Fi Channel movie budget and just see it on one or two nights done one of those bad sci-fi original movies.
You mean done on purpose as a bad sci-fi movie. Okay.
So, fortunately, no sequel for Hollywood, but Christopher Paolini had already had published 2 books by the time this movie came out, the second book being Eldest.
Eldest tells the story of the continuing rebellion and the fight against the evil empire. Aragorn goes off to train with a new master.
And Han Solo gets frozen in carbonite.
No, wait, that's the other sequel. To his credit, he did steer a little bit further away from the Star Wars mold. Eldest is not The Razak Strikes Back.
Far from it, actually. He did a really good job of saying, okay, this is my story now. I'm a couple years older, I'm more experienced, and really drawing on his own insights this time.
I'm going to borrow a comparison that, again, some critics made, that this book has a little bit more in common with The Two Towers than it does The Empire Strikes Back. Not in the fact that he rips off the story, but because he takes it and divides it essentially in half. Half of the story talks about Aragorn and him learning more about being a dragon rider. The other half focuses in on his cousin Rohan and his journey to join up with the rebellion. On the downside, the book was even longer. It had parts that were even more drawn out. For me, it was really kind of a struggle to get through, and I'm a very avid reader. I love reading, and there were just points in this book where I had to put it down and walk away for a little while because it was not capturing my interest.
I had the exact opposite experience with this book. I thought that this showed a very increased maturity. I really liked the storytelling, and I'm so glad that you would say that it's more like The Two Towers, because you can see that Lord of the Rings storytelling, where now he has split it up. You have Aragorn's story, and you have Rohan's story, and they're both important to the conclusion of the rebellion. What's going to happen? How are they going to overthrow this evil emperor? But they're two separate individual stories that are woven together. And I thought he did a really good job of weaving it. And whereas I still agree that he does take a long time to describe things, it was just done so well that this book really drew me in, as opposed to you who had to push the book away. I couldn't read it enough. I didn't want to close the book.
And I do get that experience from some books. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, I could not put that book down. I had it finished in one day, and it was the same length as Eldest. I know that they're two separate books, two different writing styles, all that other good stuff, but I just could not get into this one like I could the Harry Potter books.
As you indicated, it's not truly a fair comparison. It is apples and oranges. J.K. Rowling is in a completely different place in her writing in the seventh Harry Potter book than Christopher Paolini was in his second Inheritance book. Without comparing their writing or their abilities as storytellers, it's a different place in the story. By the time you get to Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, you're at the ending of the story. You're wrapping up everybody's storylines. You're seeing, is he going to live? Is he going to die? When you're reading Eldest, it's the middle of the story. You know when you get to the ending of the book, it's not done.
Yes, we had been told that it was a trilogy.
Not fair again. They're going to make Deathly Hallows into two movies. There's certainly no more story in the Deathly Hallows than there was in Goblet of Fire. And it's the only one of the Harry Potter movies I was really disappointed with. Not that it was specifically bad, but much like I disliked the Aragorn movie because they chopped out the important parts of the book, they chopped out the important parts of the book.
It's going to be very interesting to see when they get to Deathly Hallows how they're going to make up for the fact that they chopped out several important key things that happened in book 4 that now come back in book 7 and they weren't in the movie.
Same thing with book 5. There's stuff that happens in book 5 that's set up for book 7. But we digress.
But as long as we're talking about continuing a series of books, I think that's a good place to bring us to Brisinger. Unfortunately, I have to let Doug take the reins on this one because, quite honestly, I haven't taken the time to read it, and I don't know if I'm going to.
Basically, it's a continuation from Eldest, interweaving the stories of Rohan and Aragorn. It's a coming-of-age story for both of them. You've got Aragorn coming to terms with the fact that he is a leader in not just the Dragon Riders, but with the Rebellion. And with Rohan, he's no longer a country boy, he's a soldier now, and can he take his place as a soldier and as a leader of men? As far as the positives go, I mean, this is obviously his most sophisticated work. He's got several years of writing underneath his belt now. He's familiar with the editing process and the rewriting process. This is technically a good book.
That actually brings up a question that I've had about his writing style for a while. As we said at the beginning of the show, he graduated from homeschooling at the age of 15. His first book was self-published and was very successful. The question that I have is he familiar with the editing process?
And the answer is yes. Even though Aragorn, first edition, was self-published, by the time the edition we read was published, it was actually with a professional publishing house. This is one of those books that had a real limited first print run and really gained its popularity because the child of an author read the self-published version of Aragorn and forced it upon their writer father to say, this is a good book. The writer agreed with the kid and took it to his publisher. So even though the first print, first edition was self-published, by the time we read our version, it was not that same book anymore. Books 2 and 3 are by a professional publishing house now.
I guess my point is that if he was truly familiar with the editing process, would he have to be taking this last book and dividing it into two separate books? Because it was too long to be one book.
These companies are out to make money. If he tells his publisher, this book is so long, I need to make it two books, the publisher is going to be thinking, cha-ching, more money. Stephen King has done his Dark Tower series. He's done its through. But if he told his publisher, you know, I think I got another story in me. Do you think that publisher's going to say no?
No, they'll say cha-ching. I guess the question that goes through my mind is, if he was capable of editing, which is better, putting together two books out of the one big story, or learning how to take some of these rabbit trails that he takes and dividing them off into another series, doing the Inheritance trilogy and then doing another trilogy based on Rohan and another trilogy based on someone else?
That's not the story, though. That's like saying, you know what, let's have one movie based on Luke Skywalker and his adventures and another based on Han Solo and his adventures. Their stories are tied together.
Yes, but in the book series, there are books that deal just with Luke Skywalker's adventures and just with Han Solo's adventures and just with Chewbacca's adventures.
But those are those stories, though. It's a Han Solo story or a Chewbacca story or whatever. It's not the Inheritance Cycle story. There's enough history in this Inheritance universe that they could tell many other stories. They could tell the stories of the dwarves, stories of the elves. And so I agree completely that there's more story to tell. I just don't necessarily think that he needs to split Rohan and Aragorn apart. I think they are intricate. Where I would agree with you is, going back to his descriptions, this book had something happen that I don't remember from the first two. He turned Aragorn into a whiny little bitch. I remember Aragorn questioning himself. I remember Aragorn being fascinated by this magic that he was learning. I mean, there was all sorts of development of this character in the first two books. He comes to book three, and all of a sudden, oh, I don't want to do it. I want to do it my way. I felt like he spent 100 pages doing nothing but whining. And where I was really going with that is, I think a lot of that could have been cut down. I think what he needs to do as far as his own internal editing is find out which points are most important to the story development. Because a lot of the points of Aragorn whining and saying, I want to do it my way, I don't think what you're doing is right, didn't actually develop the story. I would hear the argument that it developed his character, but I don't think his character is a whiny little bitch. That's not what I got from the first two books.
As I said, I couldn't really bring myself to read the third book just because I struggled so hard through Eldest. And at some point, I'll probably want to sit down and read it when I've gone through the hundreds of books that are already on my stack. In the amount of time that it would have taken me to read Brisinger, I managed to get three other books completed. So, to me, it really is a fair trade.
Yeah, I know. One of my favorite authors put out a book, I think, in December, which I spent all of January, February, and March reading, because it was, like, really hard to get through.
That being said, though, I do give Paolini a great deal of credit, because the greatest positive of all is the fact that he is getting kids to read. The kids really enjoy his work, and anything that can get kids to read in this day and age is a good thing.
Books, they're just a fad!
Yeah, in another couple hundred years, they'll be printed on data pads, and you can read them and then erase them and upload new ones, and, oh wait, they can already do that. Never mind.
Well, for my final words, I'd like to say, give it a try. Remember, it is written by a young adult for a young adult audience. I think you'll enjoy it, and overall, you'll feel it was worth your time.
If you like Anne Rice, and you like a lot of detail, go for it. Give it a read. It really is entertaining, as long as you can get past the dry parts.
As always, we'd like to thank you for listening to TwerpCast. We encourage your feedback. Please write jim@twerponline.net. And don't forget, we can also be found on Facebook, MySpace, and Zynga.
TwerpCast is a production of Timewell Electronic Recording Productions, copyright 2009.